couple of announcements before we get started on slide presentation. In the past, what I've done is I usually had music and then the slide presentation would cycle through, and it was up to you to read the captions of the slide presentation. But what I've learned and noticed about people, even the big people are little people. They look at the pictures and they don't read the captions. And at the end of the presentation, I open it up for a Q&A, and I end up answering all the questions that captions answer. So I'm going to narrate as I go through. I'm going to leave the music. You get to listen to me. And at the ending of it, we'll open it up for a Q&A. If you've got any further questions that wasn't covered, or maybe you had a question, then you can ask at that time. I will say this also, somewhere in the middle of the presentation, there is a blank wall, a slide that says, human carnage. Two or three slides thereafter, pretty graphic. If you've got sensitive spirit on you, just close your eyes. You don't want the little ones looking, that's your cue when you see that. Slide, that's your cue. And someone says, well, why would you have that on there? Well, let me tell you why I have it on there. You drive from your home, you come to church, you drive home. No issues, no roadblocks, no nothing. You get up in the morning, go to work, no issues, no drama. People love to see the baptisms, that's what we need to see, it's the Lord's work. Church organizations, Bible conferences, singing and yada yada yada. But I want people here in America to see, what does it take for me working in that arena to get this?
Yes. Amen.
As most people think that my life is just parroting Americans, it's not. It's a very different life. So that's why some of that's on it. So we'll go ahead and start this presentation. This is a brand new presentation. It's not an old one. I've known missionaries and people that come over and they have nothing new to show and they just keep... If you don't have anything new, don't show us the old. We've seen it. We got it the first time.
Yeah.
This is what's happened in the last two and a half years. Mm-hmm. So we'll go ahead and go through it. Papua New Guinea, or New Guinea, the island of New Guinea, second largest island in the world. You can look here, you don't have to look at me, I'm just going to narrate. Second largest island in the world, and it is about the size of Texas and Louisiana put together, in landmass. You can see there's an arrow about the center. The eastern half of New Guinea is Papua New Guinea. The western half, same island, western half is under the Irangia government. They call it West Papua. Different government. There's a border right in the center of the country. That border is an imaginary border. There's no customs, immigration, no police. Only on the extreme ends of the country, down here where you've got the ocean ports, you'll find customs, immigration. But all in the country here, there's nothing. You can walk over, same people, same language, everything remains the same. So the whole country of Papua New Guinea, the eastern half, is where I live, and there's an arrow with a blue star that's in Mount Hagen, that's centrally located in the country, and that's mostly where I live now. I do travel back and forth to the old mission station. It's about a 12-hour drive to the old mission station from Mount Hagen. But that's where I conduct most of the mission work and teach in the Bible Academy. The forgotten world, Papua New Guinea is the forgotten world. It's the end of the world. Literally, that's not an exaggeration. Literally, it's the end. It's about 12,000 miles from here to New Guinea. It's 24,000 miles around the world. So when you get to New Guinea, if you leave going east or west, you're going back where you came from. So that's the end of the world. PNG sits in the middle of the Ring of Fire. What does that mean? It means that in that part of the South Pacific, what they call the Ring of Fire, is a lot of volcanic activity under the ocean And when there's a volcanic activity in the ocean, tsunamis come. Earthquakes come. I've been in two earthquakes in the last 2.5 years. One was a 5.5, the other one was a 7.2. Big earthquake. Here's some data for you. Capital city population 2023. That's the capital city pushing 410,000. The continent is over in the Oceania, they call it. James Madibe, who's the Prime Minister. Huli tribesmen, I do speak with him. I've met him on several occasions. I know him personally. When we meet, we don't speak in English. We speak in the Huli language, which is his tribal language. So it's almost like a personal visit when I visit with them. Population in Papua New Guinea is pushing 10 million. The currency is Papua New Guinea kina. The exchange rate, if you take one US dollar, you're going to get about 3.35 Papua New Guinea kina. That's the exchange rate. 830 to 850 tribal languages in Papua New Guinea. Wow. It's an absolute linguistic nightmare. There are languages that have not even been translated yet. But there are some major languages, Tok Pidgin, English, the Papuan, and so on and so on. Poverty rate, out of that nearly 10 million, 85.7% are living on less than $2 a day. Papua New Guinea is one of the richest countries in the world per capita. Understand that, per capita. Gold, silver, oil, gas, copper, natural resources, timber, coffee, tea, cocoa, vanilla. It goes on. I can keep going on with this. One of the richest countries in the world per capita, natural resources, yet one of the poorest. Now you tell me what's wrong with that picture. Landowners in Saudi Arabia, the sheikhs, million billionaires. The landowners of the oil and the gas and the gold and so on in Papua New Guinea are still wearing bush clothes. So you tell me what's wrong with that picture. Port Moresby World War II Memorial. PNG's seen a lot of heavy fighting in World War II. My father, Fred Hallerman, also served in Papua New Guinea. Port Moresby, that's an aerial view, capital Papua New Guinea. You can only access from Port Moresby to the highlands by air. When you fly into Papua New Guinea from international flights, you land here. From there, you've not even entered the real Papua New Guinea. A flight from Port Moresby to the highlands is about 45 minutes. It runs about $250-$280. It's expensive. No roads, you have to fly. Every city has ghettos. Port Moresby has ghettos too. These are houses built just along the shoreline and actually a little bit in the ocean. PNG Stone Age to the computer age, 63 years. You explain to me how a nation of people are catapulted from Stone Age. And when I say Stone Age, that's what I mean. It's not an exact Stone Age, stone axes. When my father went there, they were using stone axes. From 1963 up to 2023, they went from Stone Age to smartphone. No graduations. So you can kind of begin to understand why there's some problems. On a scale of 1 to 10, PNG is always scores a 9 or 10 in criminal causes. PNG is number 2 in the world in hard crime. The number 1 country is Venezuela. Let that sink in. I'm not talking about pickpocketing. I'm talking about getting your head chopped off. I'm talking about gang rape. I'm talking about burning people alive. Armed robbery. That's what I'm talking, hard crime, that's what I'm talking about. And Venezuela's number 1, PNG's number 2. Human trafficking has picked up. This is a picture to show you the contrast between The old days of 1960, on your right, those two pictures my dad took, and then on the left I took, that's in 2023 at Port Moresby. You see the contrast? And here you can see people still mummify their relatives on the left. At the top right is the Hoodie Wigmen, the Hoodie tribesmen are known as the Wigmen. They make their own wigs out of their own hair. Every man has his own wig. He's the one that does it. It's his own identity. It's his trademark, his copyright of who he is. And on the bottom, there's another tribe, the Acero Mudmen, a lot of witchcraft in that amongst this tribe on the bottom. Some markets here, where you'll see some several pictures of markets. The picture on the left is an open market, I think of, open market. You can find anything from food to animal parts, meats, fruits, veggies, traditional wear, all sorts of things are sold in the markets. Top right is Eastern Highlands, a tribe. I have some dealings with them, not much. Tallest mountain in Papua New Guinea is 14,793 feet above sea level. The only place in the world where it's triple digits at the bottom, you get to the top, it's snow-capped. Only place in the world. Those were two Japanese tourists. I was there when they came up there, so I took their picture. They're taking a picture too. These are some different tribes. The picture on the left would be the Chimbu tribesmen. My father was first going to minister amongst these people when he was searching for the where the Lord would have him, but it didn't work out. They had problems. A lot of division over land that they were going to give Dad, so Dad took it as not the Lord's will to settle amongst these people, and he moved on. And the people to the top right, the Dani tribesmen, they are about three days hike from the mission station. I do minister to those people. The bottom right, the Huli tribesmen, these are women, not men, and they are painted up for celebration. Pay attention to that colour. That colour is only for celebration, not war. The colour will change and you'll see it. The left picture, the Sepik River, one of the second largest river in PNG, full of crocodiles. Top right, coast off of Madain, you see a ship in the background, also small boats. Bottom right, shark marketing. They do catch sharks and they market them. I've eaten some of the shark meat too. On your left, there's a Duna tribesman. He's painted up for a war party. He's going to war that evening. Top right, Air New Guinea. That's government owned. One of the larger aircraft that you'll find in Papua New Guinea. Bottom right, this is common to see during the national elections. Left is Port Moresby, capital city of Papua New Guinea. You can find just about anything you want there. Most white people go into Papua New Guinea to say they're going to do mission work, go here. And you want to know why? It has everything there that you have here. ATMs, internet, 5-star hotels, grocery shops, security. The missus doesn't have to worry about going here, going there. She goes with an escort. All the homes are barricaded in with compound walls and security and armed guards and security dogs. But they have all of the resources. So no one wants to go to the highlands. They go here. Top right, Hoodie tribesmen, again, they're decked out for celebration. Bottom right, off of the coast of Lae, I was on a canoe or a small boat going over to another island to do mission work and took that picture. Top left, or the far left, these men I grew up with in my primary years. They still dress like that today. You've heard the old saying that you can judge a man's character by the friends he keeps. Those are my friends. You're going to see some more of my friends. top right, snorkeling, some of the best snorkeling in the world is off the coast of Papua New Guinea and the New Guinea Islands. And then the bottom right, Papua New Guinea is not known for the animals, rather it's known for its famous bird life, and the fauna and the flora and the bird life is just exotic. People come from all over the world for bird watching and will spend extraordinary amounts of money bird watching. The left, the Dani people, I had been in that village for several days, and they also are going on a war party, and you can see the lifestyle that they live. Top right, the sea becomes very, very different when you're in a canoe. The ocean. It's one thing to be on an ocean liner. It's another thing to be in a canoe on the ocean. Bottom right, MAF. Who's heard of MAF? Anybody? Okay, MAF, Missionary Aviation Fellowship. MAF, they have a headquarters in North Carolina. And they've been there for over 50 years, servicing Papua New Guinea. They mostly fly small aircraft, reaching very, very remote places. The left is road construction. It does take heavy equipment to do road construction in Papua New Guinea. Top right is a common bridge that's hand-constructed across rivers. No nails, no wire, that's just a handmade bridge with poles and bamboo and cane, and you walk across it. That's a good bridge. That's not a bad bridge, that is a good bridge. Bottom right is another market. Someone asked me, they said, well, do you walk across it? Of course I walk across it. Sunsets, man has his copyright. God's got his copyright. That's God's signature.
Amen.
Every time you see a sunrise and a sunset, think of it as God's signature upon the heavens.
Yeah.
The next few pictures are going to show you something of the youth and the lifestyle and what's happening in Papua New Guinea. You ever seen a blonde-haired Negro? They've got them in New Guinea. They're not albinos. Don't confuse albino with a blonde-haired Negro. They're not albinos. Albino means that there's something wrong with a genetic gene. These are perfectly normal children. They got blonde hair. top right, children are now being forced into criminal camps. You have gangs of criminals that will go into a village and raid the village and capture the young men, take them off, put them in criminal training camps. That's what they're doing. Bottom right, children in a local market, just off the coast of Lae. Quite a contrast. Left, you have tribal and modern dress. You see the contrast. You can go either way in New Guinea. Top right, you've got the Mount Hagen child dressed in tribal celebrations. And the bottom right, the Inga tribesmen. They're a brother tribe to the Huli tribesmen. These are brother tribes on the bottom right. The left, those are the Huli. So the Huli tribesmen, the Inga tribesmen, and the Duna tribesmen are all brother tribes. Just some other pictures of children. The social life of the Papua New Guineans are very integrated. Children are not left out. It's what used to be in this country too. They weren't used to this country. They didn't babysit their children with electronics. Didn't have electronics. Church is organized. We have some churches that are organized the New Testament way. Kilawa Baptist Church, Mount Hagen, just outside of Mount Hagen City, was organized in 2019. I was involved in that, and the building, I was involved in the construction of it. That pastor on the left picture has a story. He was the first pastor, Christian actually, he wasn't a pastor yet, but the first Christian that had a church marriage. Understand how important this is. He was him and his wife was the first church marriage under Dad's ministry in Papua New Guinea years ago. He's been a pastor for some 50 years. He's in his 90s.
Wow.
He's recently went back to his village, and there's indications it'll not be long. He'll go home.
Yeah.
But he served his life to the Lord. Kilwa Baptist Church to the top right, services. People sit on the ground. In this building, we could sit 200 to 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
They sit on the ground, back to back, elbow to elbow. No one goes home, no one complains. That's inside of a new church, Kilwa Baptist Church inside. That's Pastor Kundu preaching. And then over to the right is another church, Kim Baptist Church. And then the bottom right is when the pastors were, 25 of them were in the Bible Academy, and that's on a Sunday morning. They're all lined up. They've all got assignments. Every Sunday they have an assignment. They have to preach on what they learned that week. So there's theory and there's practical.
Yes.
This is another church that was organized, Southern Grace Baptist Church of Bands. And that is also outside of Mount Hogan. And these are some of the people that helped or attended during the organization. It went 3 days. People get there early, get their seat, like Baptists should. I think some of the Papua New Guineans need to come over to America and start teaching Americans, get to church and get a seat. Baptisms. Baptisms are in the rivers. Nothing wrong with a artificial baptism if that's all you have, the fabricated, if that's what it takes. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's something about a river baptism. Just something about it. Open air, natural, parrots, the New Testament, just something about it. There's the church building on the top right, the decorations on the bottom. Another church organized, Southern Grace Baptist Church at Rondon Ridge. This host setting went about a week long. And that same building is used twofold for church services and also for the Bible Academy. And I was involved in the building of that building. It's all geared for the Papua New Guinea people, not Americans. And that's, these pictures are showing you the construction of the building on the bottom right. The left, there's food being gathered and preparation for church organization and the crowd sitting in there. And in preparation for any big event in Papua New Guinea, you've got what we call the traditional Papua New Guinea movement. That has nothing to do with a cow. Spelled N-U-M-U. That is a pidgin word. It has to do with the traditional way of cooking food in the ground with hot rocks. It takes some material to heat the rocks. That's what they're doing, is cleaving the firewood. And the firewood is being split up, and then on the bottom right you've got food being brought in. The top left you've got the decoration of the church building. It's a big, big thing for the people of Papua New Guinea. When you have things like this going on, pigs that are being offered for the meal, the left, pigs are slaughtered and cut up and cooked in the ground with the food. The top right, that would be bananas. Papua New Guinea is the banana capital of the world, not in terms of export, in terms of species. 100, 200, 300, 400 species of bananas. Not 40, not 4, 400. And they're all different. Don't think they're all the same. They're not. Anything from finger-sized bananas to, I've seen bananas up to almost 18 inches long in Papua New Guinea. And the trees will grow tall enough, they cut them down with an axe.
Wow.
So, yeah. If you want to learn about bananas, come to New Guinea. There's some more pictures of the preparation of the food for the day of the organization. They start in the very early morning hours of the night. The cutting up of the meat in public is only for the men. So that means Jimmy gets appointed, I get appointed, David gets appointed, Thomas gets appointed, and you get to hold a pig. You're not old enough to cut. You get to hold a pig. You're not old enough to cut. Butcher. And the women bring food, and the young girls help the women, and us men do the cutting. And you get to hold the pig. You're not old enough to cut, butcher. So that's what they're doing there. And here, lads, they're putting the food in the ground. The rocks have been heated. They line the bottom with leaves, banana leaves, and put rocks on the bottom, hot rocks. Cover those with banana leaves and start putting the food in. It's all placed in order. And lastly goes the meat on top. And then they cover the meat and all of the food's covered with banana leaves. Put hot rocks on top of that. Cover it again. And cover it with soil. You've got an earth pressure cooker. 2 hours or less. You take it out, and the meat will fall off the bones.
Wow.
Doesn't matter how many pigs you cook. Doesn't matter how long it is. Doesn't matter how much food. It's all going to cook the same amount. Here's the church opening, and of course you see a picture where they're placing the pigs, the meat into the ground. Bible conference in PNG. Most Bible conferences will go a week long. This is a Bible conference at one of the churches out of the old mission station and Tangi. We had nearly 2,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just some of the pictures of the Bible conference. We put all the children up front. No child sits in the back. Doesn't matter who your parents are. All men are the fathers. We're all fathers. And all the women are moms, the older women. And the girls, the young ones, take care of the babies, and all the mommies take care of what they need to, and all the dads, fathers, and so the children get put in the front. No one goes out. No disturbances. It's very orderly. Everyone helps correct everyone else's children. How would that go over here? Bible conferences, they'll sit all the way to almost the pulpit, hardly any place or room to stand or walk around. I've had children even up around the pulpit sitting because so many people and just sitting around my feet. I can't even move. It's like, well, you've got a house full. Preach to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the military truck. We used it in New Guinea. It's on another mission. I've got close to 90 people on that truck. It's got a 20-foot bed, and they hang everywhere. On the front bumper, on off of the railing, on the back. It doesn't matter whether sitting or hanging or standing. Get on. This is pictures where the people were having a Bible conference outside, so we build a structure and put tarpaulins over it so that we can give shelter to the people when the church building won't hold all the people. Baptisms, again, New Testament way in the rivers. Some more baptisms. Again, some more baptisms. A baptism is a public testimony of the gospel. And here's some offerings of some more pigs. I call them pigs. I understand the proper word as pigs and hogs. I get it. I understand that. But when you speak the language in New Guinea long enough, certain words just get adapted into your vocabulary. I just say pigs. There's the truck on another mission. I'm running super singles on it for those who are mechanically inclined or have an interest in vehicles and trucks. It is a 6x6, and I've got about 18 ton on the vehicle. You get it right before you go up the mountain. I did some homework in America, and most highways in America, even across the country to California back again, most highways are graded no more than a 7 to 8% grade. Now I'm talking about even through Wyoming, even through Montana, even through Idaho. That's what I'm talking about. 7 to 8% because of the trucks, because of the loads, because of the speed. In Papua New Guinea, it is common for roads to be graded at 27%. Get it right before you go up the mountain. No guardrails, no safety barricades, no runaway ramps. You go off a mountain in New Guinea, you'll not live to tell it. Even military trucks have breakage. There's a two steering rams on the military truck, front, right, left, power steering. The right steering ram broke. Lost a lot of hydraulic fluid. Had to secure it up to get back to Mount Hagen to do repairs on the truck. Top right, it's a work day. We're loading stones out of a river in the truck for construction. Bottom right is going through a local market. To your left, forging a 60-inch flooded road. It rained for 5 days non-stop, day and night. On an average, we get about 2 inches of rain a night, a day in Papua New Guinea. In a calendar year, we're facing about 400 inches. It's a lot of water. I've heard people tell me, I've yet to believe it. I'm not sure that I believe this. I live in New Guinea. I see it rain. I see the water. I have a rain gauge. I've been taking records for the last 5 years. I know what, when you say 1 inch has fallen, I know what that means. I've heard people in Florida tell me, and I'm not sure I believe this. But I've heard people tell me that they've had 2 inches in 30 minutes. I'm not sure I believe that. To get 2 inches in New Guinea, it literally hammers the whole night. Non-stop. And I don't see how they get 2 inches in Florida in 30 minutes. Anyway, whatever that means to you. The vehicle had to forge this, it was a road, the only road to go through, and it was flooded, 60 inches of water. The tires and wheels on the truck, they are at 52 inches. It was above the wheels, above the front bumper, the lights went underwater. So get it right. Right and left hand side of the road, you don't know where it is. Pick a middle, stay in it. If you go off, you've got big problems. I had 88 people on board driving through that river, or that flood. Vehicle maintenance. The hazards and high cost of vehicle operations and PNG fabrication and engineering is a must. Left, that's fuel packed up. The fuel filter's packed up. That's rubbish in the fuel. The right, top right, and bottom right, and that has a story, I'll get to it later. That's the big truck, that's the military truck stuck. I'll talk more about that in a moment. It's stuck, but it is stuck. But it's not. You say, what do you mean? Well, wait, I'll get to it. But I want you to see these pictures. The truck does have a 20-ton winch. It's driven by PTO, not electrics. That means it's gear-driven. Just remember that. Okay, this is a bridge that I fell through with the big truck. Went across it with 88 people on board, get to the mission station. I'm out there for about 7 days, 2 weeks, completion, turn around, drive back to Mount Hagen. Thieves and criminals will remove the sheets on the iron bridges. They see you going through, they'll remove the sheets on one side only to give an appearance that the bridge is okay. You don't see it. It can be 20, 30, maybe 40 feet long. The bridge's span is about like that. Maybe the drop can be anywhere from 50 onwards down. If you drop through the bridge, you're not coming out. They take out the sheets on one side. Vehicle will fall through. They come out of the bush, rob you, kill you, take whatever. That's what they do. I fell through the bridge. I'm on the big truck, the 10-ton truck, engaged the front wheels, front axles, pulling the rear axle. I keep dropping through. Three sections I dropped through, cracked my head, cracked my elbow, got through, beat up the truck a bit. You'll see some pictures, but I came out alive. Now, what happened? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Here's some more pictures of the bridge that I fell through, left and top right. The bottom right, that's half-inch plate, twisted it up like a pretzel. But it did save me. And here's repairs on the bumper. literally cut it off, straightened it up, welded it back, retempered it, painted it back to new, bent the rim on one of the wheels. There's some more pictures. The bottom right is a completion of the job, back to normal. The name of the truck is Ebenezer Grace.
Amen.
You understand the meaning of those names? Ebenezer. If you don't know what the word means, look it up. Grace. So she helped me. God helped me. God used her to help me. Lost a wheel, complete wheel and tire, lost it completely. Jimmy, you understand some mechanics, and maybe some others. Thomas, maybe understand. I'm very privy to hearing mechanical noise. I pay attention. There was no indications. This was Sunday morning. Went to church, coming back. I had a load of people. Get off the main road. No indication of mechanical failure. I'm on a dirt road going around a corner. The wheel completely went off the axle. Almost killed a young, almost. What's the deep meaning of almost? Doesn't mean anything. He wasn't killed. The boy wasn't killed. Who did that? Satan did that. That's not an accident, folks. That's real.
Yeah.
And can you imagine me doing 40, 50 miles an hour down the sealed road with 80 some people on board, and that wheel comes off, and it's 250 pounds a wheel. Rolling at 40 miles an hour, can you imagine what it would have done to some people or another vehicle? It would have killed a lot of people. That would have put me this in New Guinea. The Lord allowed, and I believe the Lord sent an angel fighting with an evil spirit. They were fighting, I believe.
Yes.
And come off the dirt road, and the Lord tucked me into a corner, no people, no market, nothing, no one, and tucked me in there, and the wheel came off. No one got hurt. Cost about $5,000 to fix the vehicle, but I did it, and it's repaired, and that took a while to do. The shaft, there's the short shaft of the hub, removed it, no machine shop, Jimmy. I welded that up, and I polished it up with polishing flapper wheels on a grinder, and then I recut the threads with a hacksaw blade. Right top is where the wheel was damaged, the brake liners, everything was damaged, rebuilt all of that, put it back together. There's the old Land Rover, bought brand new in 2004, needs to be replaced, more on that later. It has well over 500,000 miles, not kilometers. That would be 90% off-road usage. 2 gunshot bullet holes through the windscreen of the Land Rover. AK-47, roadblock. I'm wearing 2 bulletproof vests, class 3. Soft body armor, plates on top. When you buy a class 3 bulletproof vest over here, it comes with 3/8 plate. I took the 3/8 plate out, made my own plates, tempered them. I put in 5/8 inch plate. It'll stop 308. It stopped the AK-47. There was some shrapnel. But I got saved. Yes, people chop it off. Yes, the Lord said, I get that. I know that the Lord saved me. Would the Lord have saved me if I'd not been wearing the bulletproof vest? You answer that. That's what I wear, and that's how I travel.
How much of a vest weigh?
Sorry?
How much of a vest weigh?
I'm running, on the plate vest, I'm running about 14, 15 pounds. That's the old Land Rover, maintenance on it. It's constant repair. It's just repair for a few more weeks. Things are worn out. You can't do anything with metal fatigue. Some of us know about that in welding. You're taking welding, pay attention. You can't do anything with metal fatigue. I've been doing this for 38 years. I know a little something about that. Repair it, fix it, weld it, get a few more miles, breaks, cracks, you start over. They say you can't weld axle shafts. I do. The bottom right is an axle, rear axle shaft that snapped. I welded it back, polished it up, put it back in, got a few more miles out of it. Made my own brake shoes, brake pads, top right. If you're not good with fabrication, don't come to New Guinea. I can't use you. The left side, the coverings are all off the doors. The windows are taped up, and I put in plates, quarter-inch plates, down into the doors when I drive. Go leave town. Top right, I made the rubber bushings on the motor mounts are gone. I made my own rubber bushings. Bottom right, where you close the door, I keep telling people, stop slamming the doors. Stop it. People don't listen to that because they don't do the maintenance. This is what happens. I want you to take a good look at that picture, the bottom right. That's not me doing that. That's tribal people. They get in the vehicle, wham! And after months and months and years of this, the door jamb, that is where the door locks when you close it. The little latch on the door, that's what it locks onto. There's a metal pin. And that's attached to a side sill or a wall of, help you understand, the door frame. Continuous slamming will break the rubber liner. And it's not long. You live in tropical climates where it rains. It's not long that's going to start leaking because your rubber liner doesn't seal any longer. You've got leakage. Well, I wonder how that happened. And then the doors don't close because the seal is broken. So I use rubber straps with hooks now. Get in there. Don't close the door. Just get in. I'll close it. So they're tied together with rubber straps. And they say, oh, Mr. Missionary, the door's not closed. Yes, and I wonder why. pay attention to what I have to do with the old Land Rover. The steering ball joints are secured with rubber tubing. Thomas got introduced to this in Africa. We don't travel anywhere without rubber tubing. Rubber tubing, we take rubber tubing, the tubing that goes in the tires, we cut long strips, 2 inches, 3 inches, 1 inch wide, whatever. We don't throw nothing away. Mom knows about this. We throw nothing away in New Guinea or Africa. And so the rubber strips are tied up in bundles, keep it in the vehicle. When something breaks, tie up in rubber. See, I had some silly question. Someone in California said, why don't you just go down and buy a new one? I said, right, come over with me and I'll send you to go buy it. Tied up with rubber straps, the ball joints. On the top right, there was no brake pads, metal against metal, use your gears and go very slow. Bottom right, back seat, just wore out. That's my seat to the left. Again, top right, ball joint secured up with rubber tubing. And the inside of the cab, bottom right. The left-hand picture is I lost a seal at the camshaft and lost a lot of oil driving down the road. Had to stop. I carry a lot of spare parts, tools. I did my own workshop on the road and tapped into the casing of where the camshaft is. That's an old rubber bushing that I used and put in a plate there to hold it with bolts, and it sealed it, and it's still working. And the top right is fuel rubbish on the fuel filter. Bottom right, that's some of my welding of the axle shaft to the final drive. That's TIG welding, Isaac, Isaiah. You want a TIG weld? That's it. Get it right. Fuel contamination, the chassis on the top right cracked, had welded up. That's the Land Rover. That's PNG road system. Road conditions in PNG. I pull a lot of these people out. when I'm traveling, either the Land Rover or the big truck, either or, but these are rain conditions. Nobody rides free. If you get stuck, everyone comes out, women, men, children, all pull and push to get out. You don't pull and push, you don't ride. That's how that works. These are some more conditions of the road conditions and people stuck. I was going through, pulled these three vehicles out with the big truck. That's the 6x6 truck stuck at the mission station. Satanism is very real. Witchcraft is real. He's the prince of the power of air. He has many demons working for him. A long story, I'll cut it short. It rained several days hard. The vehicle was parked there. That's the entrance into the mission station. Thought I'd better move it, put it back up on the level ground, went to go move it. It would not come out. It had sunk down about 8 inches in the mud. That's not stuck. These are 52-inch tires. It wouldn't come out. It's just sitting there spinning front end. And follow the story and you answer me. Wouldn't come out, so it's got a 20-ton winch on the front, so I put all the recovery equipment. There's a tree over here, a tree over here, a suspended 20-ton binders with D-rings, and I could take the winch and lock onto it, and I got the winch involved. It's going to pull it right out. Didn't pull it out. Understand me? Didn't pull it out. What happened? It pulled a tree over. One of the trees literally came out and just fell over. And I'm not talking about a little sapling. I'm not talking about one of these little things. I know what to do. It's a tree. A 20-ton winch pulled it over. So we have to abandon the winch story. We go to digging. And you see, prior to the pictures, the vehicle was jacked up. And we got stones underneath the wheels. I have timbers. We put timbers under the wheels. The tires is sitting up. I got 3 20-ton bottle jacks. Those of us who do this kind of work, you can understand what I'm about to say. 3 20-ton bottle jacks, 3 of them, brand new. We're jacking to get the vehicle raised up, put stones and put timbers under the wheels. After the second day, the bottle jacks, all 3, stopped functioning. Why? Okay, mechanically, the viscosity of the oil has overheated. Maybe that's the problem. I go up to the house. I've got spare viscosity oil, hydraulic oil. I replace the oil, put it in there. The pumps, the jacks would not operate. Abandon the jacks. What's going on? The winch that won't pull it out, pull the tree over. The truck's not moving. I'm not talking about moving and sliding back. That's not what I'm talking about. It wouldn't move. The wheels are spinning and it's sinking. The jack stopped working. A man comes to me the third day and he says, Mr. Halliman, you're not going to get your truck out because there's been witchcraft medicine put on it. Laugh at that and think it's silly. Go ahead. You haven't lived on a mission field in third world countries. Satan is nothing to laugh at. He's real. The demons are real. So the satanic world is real. He's the prince of the power of the air. And whether you have ever been exposed or not to witchcraft, it's real.
Right.
And that's why the truck wasn't coming out. Mechanically, nothing was working. On day number 5, I had over 100 men, some pushing, some pulling with ropes. And these are strong, strong people. And I told the men, they were very close to the truck, behind it, or all around it. I said, when it comes out, it's probably going to catapult. Literally. It did. It came out. And when the truck came out, it was almost as though something had anchored this truck. And when it came out, it came out. Almost like it was simply released and it shot forward. What happened? Satan was binding the truck, or his demons. And God sent some angels to pull it out. And it came out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story of that. There's how it was. You can see it's not buried. Why is it not coming out? Why are the jacks not working? Why is the winch not pulling it out? Why did it pull the tree over and not pull the truck out? That's what I run into. These are not toys. These are real weapons that shoot real bullets. That's not an AK-47. That's a 30mm. They will hike over to Iran Jaya for 2 weeks and trade off marijuana for guns and weapons and hike back. And that's what they have. That's an angry mob that I ran into. Get through that. They're not just armed with bows and arrows, they got weapons, automatic weapons. They got machetes. So when you run into that, you either negotiate, get through, turn around if you can, and drive back, go back where you came from, or it's going to be a bad day. This is what happens when the tribal people get angry. There was an election. Maybe someone said that I showed another church. They said maybe that's what we should do. They seized the township, the landowners, and the government aircraft came in, had soldiers and police on board. They torched the aircraft, said to the pilot, come out and go up in the aircraft. The military, the soldiers, and the police come out and give us your guns, or you go up in the aircraft too. They torched the courthouse, police station, and seized the airstrip because the elections went wrong. That's what they do in New Guinea. Here's the human carnage. So that's your cue, whatever you want to do. This is a man that justice was carried out swiftly to a criminal leader. This criminal leader had carried out a massacre on 24 church members. Christian people that are associated with our mission work. And I'm not talking about just men. No, that used to be the rules in New Guinea. Used to be the men went to war. Used to be the men would fight. And that's all. No longer, women are targeted, men are targeted, children are targeted, white people are targeted. We were off limits, not any longer. So, they served justice on this man. Here's the bodies of some of the church members, and I was on the scene, and we simply wrapped up the bodies in plastic and carried them off to be buried. These are some of the women and people that were slaughtered. Chopped up with machetes is the weapon of choice. That's what they do. Well, a little more better scene here. PNG sunsets and sunrises. This is at 7,300 feet elevation. The weather pattern changes quickly throughout the course of the day and night. Again, some more sunsets. This is God's signature. Beautiful sun. There's a rainbow. You ever seen a double rainbow? I have. One rainbow under the other. I see them in New Guinea. Flowers. I'll tell you a story about flowers. These are flowers grow natural in Papua New Guinea. Beautiful, beautiful flowers. And they'll bring them, children will gather the flowers and bring them to church as an offering. Don't have coins, don't have money, so that's their offerings. Tithes. They'll give tithes on flowers. Listen, folks, it's not just tithes on money. Now, you may got it wrong. You may think that, well, I didn't tithe. There's a lot you can tithe on. I'm not going to get into that. I got much more to talk about. So these flowers brought in by the children. I was teaching Sunday school one morning. There's no flowers. So I had my Bible open. All the children come. There's about 100 children. I didn't say anything. I just closed my Bible. I said, well, I'm going home. The children all looking at me like, why would you go home? We're here for Sunday school. And one little girl raised her hand. She says, Mr. Missionary, why are you going home? I said, because there's no flowers. No, I'm not going. I'm going to teach. I taught. The next Sunday, they beat me to church, and from that wall to that wall was flowers, the tables were flowers, under the tables were flowers, all the way up to the pulpit, there were flowers, and they were all sitting there with big grins on their faces. Some more flowers. Beautiful flowers. It's just all natural flowers. They're beautiful, gorgeous. Can you imagine what you would pay for these flowers?
Yeah.
Over here, just huge amounts of money. And there's just a natural day where service is outside the day, or outside the church house. Bible Academy, the pastors are sitting for their examinations. And here's in the schooling where they were being schooled. I taught for 6 months, 1,000 class hours. If you want to know, I'll talk to David about this, Brother David. If you want to know how Bible academies teach here in America, look it up. It's not 1,000 class hours in 6 months. It's not that. And they have multiple instructors. Not me. One. All day long, like this. From 7 in the morning to 5:30 in the afternoon. Teaching non-stop, 1 hour for lunch. For 6 months, this. The final exams, New Guinea, we construct buildings that are conducive to the people. Nothing more, nothing less. The final examinations went for a week long. This is a Bible conference where we also merged the graduation of the students on what we call Standard 1. There's some of the conference and the church services on the day of the graduation. All the pastors are sitting there lined up with their white shirts and ties. And these are the students with their certificates. That's only for Standard 1. Anybody fails, they have to repeat. No cheating and no feeling sorry. Again, the students, that's outside, inside, outside pictures, medical field work. I'm not a doctor, not a nurse, but I do some field work. I can save your life on the mission field. This man here had, anyone know what a tropical ulcer is? Some people, medical, maybe. You know what a boil, human body, they get boils. It's a bacteria that gets, sets up in the body and it breaks out into a boil. The Bible speaks about Job had boils.
Mm-hmm.
That's in non-tropical climates. In tropical climates, the aggressive is the tropical ulcer. Bacteria, if it ever reaches a bone, it will travel. It'll spider web, and the only cure is amputated. Get it before it travels, and you can save the limb. This pastor came to the schooling. He had a plastic bag wrapped up on his thumb. And I asked him, what's wrong? He said, well, I've got a sore. They don't know anything, much of anything. I took him to a general hospital, Mount Hagen. They said it'd be 3 months before we can get to him. They just didn't want to mess with him. So I said, that's fine. I'd keep a surgical kit in the vehicle at home. Took him home. I said, I'll take care of it for you if you're man enough to stand it. I didn't have anything to numb them up, but I can do the work. So he says, yeah. He says, I need my thumb fixed. So I cut it down the side, cut the thumb down the side, and both ends of it, laid it open, and that bone in there had been chewed up with bacteria. And so I literally just plucked out that top section of the bone. It's just a little bone in there, and just took it out, just totally deteriorated on the bottom, took it out. There's where I'm getting ready to cleanse it, clean it out. And so after I cleaned it all out, don't think that the hospitals know what to do.
Right.
God gave me some common sense. And God's got some remedies, medical remedies in his book.
Amen.
But people don't read the Bible. And so, after cleaning it up, taking that bone out, I took sea salt. Now understand me. And I packed sea salt in there. I didn't sew it up because you cannot, it'll set up gangrene in the tropics. So you close it up, wash it with iodine, sea salt's packed in there, and I wrap it. See if you're man enough for that.
Amen.
And I changed his bandage three times a day. This man never complained, no tears, nothing. And after about 16 days, it was all pinkish, nice red blood. It's healed. There's no bacteria. That's what you look for. And cleaned it all up, sutured him up, bandaged. He's got his thumb. There's no bone there, but he's got his thumb. And he was so ecstatic, so happy, just about gave me a kiss. These people are going on a war party. I'm trying to talk them out of it, but they wouldn't have anything to do with that. Now, to your left are the Dunah tribesmen, brother tribe to the Houthis on the right. The difference, the Dunah tribesmen will wear the pig tusk going down in the nose, that hole through the nose. And that's one of the, they'll wear the headband all the way down with a mother of pearl on the nose. The Houthis will wear the headband high on the brow, but they don't wear the tusk. That's the difference between these two brother tribes. These are Houthi tribesmen. You don't see no bones through their nose. And the headband is high on the forehead. That's the difference. And they're being decorated up for celebration. The colors, red, yellow, white, are for peace or joy celebration. Red, black are for war. They don't go to the gym and work out. That's just how they are. They're strong people. Don't think the women are weaklings. The women have more man in them than most men in America. They're getting ready for a PNG moo-moo here, and that's how they get the hair off. They burn it off. Slaughtering of the pigs, this was a customary honoring of a tribal chief that had died, that there were well over 200 pigs that were slaughtered. This is the cutting up of pigs where there was a man that was going to be appointed to become a new pastor for a church. So it was a big ceremony. Heating of the rocks, you'll know when the rocks are the proper temperature because they turn white. That's the gauge. And this is the covering of the food. Everyone's involved in work. No one's left out. Land Rover. If I can get this going here. Yeah, there's a... I don't know if it'll play. It wasn't video. Doesn't look like it's going to play. Anyway, I don't know why it's not playing. There's a video of me crossing a river. Maybe it's over here. Yeah. I had 20 people in that vehicle, and to them they're just excited to be there. They don't see it as some big event that, oh dear, we got to cross this river. They're all excited. No one's disappointed. They're all excited. Okay, go on to the next world. Okay, then we got this video. This is also of the picture will write itself. You don't have to turn your head something to try to turn it. It will. I'm going down the mountain in the big truck with 90 people on board. I've got about 18 ton, and the roads I have to back up to make a turn. It'll come right. Don't worry about the picture. It'll come right. I'm at 9,200 feet. That's a brand new road that's just recently been built. That's why it looks so good. Give it a few months, it won't be like that. That's the road down in the background where we're going. All big trucks have on the pneumatics, complete air system on the brakes. You don't just use your brakes. Heavy loads going down mountains, the brakes will glaze over. You don't have brakes. You have to use gearing, the engine brake, the air brakes. It all has to work together. Picture of the slide presentation. I'm looking at replacing the Land Rover. This Land Rover is in Australia. It's a 2010 Land Rover Defender, just like the one I had from 2004. It's got 80,000 miles on it. It's second-hand from Australia, not second-hand PNG. I'd never buy a second-hand PNG. I'd never buy a second-hand African either. It's not American second-hand. That's not what I mean when you say PNG. Someone said, why don't you buy a second-hand PNG? Fine, you come over, you go look for one. And then when you buy it, you drive it, and I'll watch. We'll see how that works out for you. Roughly, the vehicle is going for 48,000 clearance shipment registration. I'm looking at 60,000 to put the vehicle on road. I will not go back to PNG until I have a vehicle like that or that vehicle. I will not go back. I'm done with it. I've been at this for 38 years. You've seen the old Land Rover. I literally have it tied together, welded and tied together. I'm not doing that anymore. No one else would do it. Why do people expect me to do it? I'm not doing it. I've got roughly 50,000 sitting in an account saved up for a vehicle fund, waiting for the Lord to supply some more. That's it. That's the vehicle. Double cab, just like mine, the canopy comes off or stays on. It's got a snorkel for wading rivers, got a front winch, spot lamps. It fits the budget. That's slide presentation, Q&A. What do you want to know?
I'd just like to hear you quote Ephesians 2:8 and the language that you were preaching over there.
Okay, Ephesians 2:8. What are you going to be doing, Diago, or... Why are you going to come later? That's the Huli language. That's the Huli tribesmen I work with.
How big is that, Mark Hagen?
Its population would be 100,000.
So that's where you buy from Forest Moors from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the third largest, they call it a city. I'll tell you what Mount Hagen is like. I was in a bank doing bank work. You go in, it's all metal, it's all barred up. Security, you got security clearance with armed guards to get in. You get in, the door closes behind you, there's armed guards inside. And I was in the bank talking to one of my brothers here in America, and I said, I've got to get off the phone. I said, there's a shootout. I've got to get out of the bank. Sounds like a cowboy movie. I said, problem is, I'm in it. there was a shootout between the criminals, the thieves and robbers, and the police in town. So there's no traffic lights. And people drive around with four-wheel drives. People are armed. Either guns or machete, or people. You don't walk around not being vigilant. So there are dangers, and there's an American family that came over recently. They spent 10 months, they're from Missouri, I got to know them, helping them out. They're not with the Baptist Mission, they're with another Four Square Gospel, that's a Pentecostal group. But nice family. I was trying to help them with the language and customs and so on and so on. They wanted to know if the wife could do running and exercising with her two daughters. And I said, I would not advise that. Mm-hmm. It's not America. It's not Missouri. So they live in a compound area, hardly any place to go to just be American. And so after 10 months, we're staying in contact with one another. I was helping them out, and he said, look, He said, Brother Patience, we're packing it in. It's not working out here for us. They can't take it.
Right.
Mount Hagen is okay if you know what to do. I wouldn't have any problem taking Jimmy with me, or Thomas with me, or Isaac. I'd have to look after you. But I'd have a problem with taking a young lady. I'd constantly have to be watching her. So all my energy is now redirected for your safety. You go to the market, I have to either be with you or assign men to escort you. The appearance of Mount Hagen, great. No problem. But there's a lot of locked behind the veneer. So that's Mount Hagen. It's still somewhat safer than getting out on the roads out of Mount Hagen. Any further question?
What welding process do the natives use over there?
There's stick welding, there's some MIG, and very, very, very few are trained in TIG. Most people are going to, and the welding field, are going to go with stick welding because of the cost.
Right.
So is that from Mount Hagen where you do most of your trips now, like on the roads?
What about it?
From Mount Hagen where you do most of your road trips and you show up the roads
there. Yeah. It takes about 10 to 12 hours from Mount Hagen to the mission station, the old mission station.
Is all of the country mountainous like that?
Yes, you're either going up or you're going down. Very little, there's very few, very short distances are flat, very short. You might be going through a valley, but don't worry, you're going to come to a mountain. And that's just up and down, it's just constant.
But now, if I understood the map, that land is shared with the country of Indonesia, right?
Sorry?
You have Indonesia
yes.
on one side and then Papua New Guinea
yes.
on the other?
Yes.
But yeah. they're very different countries.
Very different. Right?
Yeah. Indonesia is much more industrialized.
Yeah, it is. But there's also a lot of probably more fighting that side because the indigenous people want independence. And the Indonesian government is not willing to give it because of the gold, resources, oil.
Have you ever crossed into Indonesia to do any mission work?
I've crossed over through the jungles.
Yeah.
Not legal.
Right.
Legal according to governments.
Sure.
It's legal according to the people. Say, well, I'm in Indonesia.
Right.
I'm in Papua New Guinea. That's it.
Yeah.
Yes?
Did I see currently three churches in Mount Hagen?
Three churches? We've actually got four.
Four? Okay.
Four now. Yeah.
Awesome.
The work is moving out from the old homestead mission station where Dad ministered. There's churches, there's pastors. They don't need me there. They were taught, they were trained. That's not mission work. Mission work is not a missionary, a preacher from wherever you're coming from, whatever that geographical location. You're going from there to this country and then you become a local pastor. That's not mission work.
Amen.
What is the literacy rate among the people?
About 78% illiterate. Illiterate. The numbers are pretty high.
So the conferences that you showed there, where were they located? Mount Hagen?
Some at the Tangi Mission Station, some at Mount Hagen.
So the Tangi Mission Station is kind of the hub for all the other churches that are really well established?
Yeah, out in the old, where the work, where Dad went and set up the, yes, it becomes a hub. Now that I'm ministering more in Mount Hagen, we have some property that has also become a hub, and we go out from there.
You said most people live on like $2 a day or
less.
So, and you mentioned farming. So, most people out where you're at, they farm? And
yes,
they,
agriculture, yes.
Yeah, do they raise the pigs? Or
they do. Well,
are they wild?
They're like a domesticated wild pig.
Okay.
They tether them, and they let them free range, But in the evenings, they'll call them back to the little holding pens and feed them sweet potatoes. And interesting enough that if a woman raises a pig, a man cannot get near it. It will become very, very aggressive. If a man raises a pig, and I'm talking about over there, I don't know how it would work over here. But I don't know how the pig would know either. How does the pig know? And if the man raises a pig, meaning there's no woman involved, he raised from a small one up to big, butchering size, no woman will ever touch that. He will eat her up, and vice versa. It's very, very interesting how that. Would it be the same in America? I don't know. But it's that way over there.
So most of the people are just surviving off of farming?
Yeah. 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 Maybe the little one. You got some questions? You have a question?
Not right now.
I thought you'd have some questions. So the little ones and the women ask the most questions. You don't have a question? Okay.
So as far as like all your maintenance costs, you have to cover that out of what you get in this.
Yeah.
When you're not traveling in your truck, in order to get to church, how far do you have to hike?
It could be anywhere, like from where I live down to Mount Hagen town, because I live out of Mount Hagen. Up on a ridge, mountain ridge. It's 11 miles. So if I have vehicle problems, I need to go into town, and I hike 11 miles to town. And I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about this. And then after the day there, then I hike back. This. And that's because it it goes from there. I mean, our hikes in New Guinea can go anywhere from a few miles to 2 or 3 days. So I'm 62. I can still hike out 25 miles in a day. As the Lord still gives me health and strength, well, that's what I'll do. I'd love a helicopter. I took training.
If somebody was coming in to you that couldn't keep up with you, I mean, how do you compensate for that?
We make bush carriers and put them on, and the men carry you, or even the women will carry you. There was a man who came over from California to visit the work. His name is Mark Jacobish, and he's visited me in Malawi and visited me in New Guinea. And he lives in California. Great guy, just super guy, and loves the Lord's work. Anyway, we're hiking, and we had to go from point A to point B mission station. He said, well, how many mountains, ridges between them here and the mission station? I said, 3. And we started hiking, and the first hike going up, first mountain, it wasn't doing too well. So anyway, fed them and had some fish and rice and cooked. And the cook boy caught up with us, gave him some fish and rice. I ate the local food, so it was no problem for me. Get on with it. I said, look, Mark, you've got to pick it up. I said, we're going to be hiking in the night if you don't pick it up. And the women are telling me in their language, we'll carry him. Don't think they can't. They can't. Strong people. So anyway, that's kind of how it is. It's a lot of hiking.
So they ended up carrying
you? No, it had to do with a pride thing. But we ended up hiking still in the night, which is not nice. It's not fun hiking the night in those jungles.
Yeah.
Headlamp, mud, rain, you can break a leg, you can, so many things. You can get killed. Any other questions?
Is there any, talking about hiking at all, is there any wildlife that you have to be aware of?
Wild pigs would be the biggest animal to worry about.
What about snakes?
Snakes are there, mostly non-poisonous,
okay.
in the highlands. Out of the coast, around the coast, they got the same coral snake they got in Australia, the most venomous snake in the world. even more so than all of Africa. And I've seen a bunch of poisonous snakes in Africa, the black mamba, the king cobra, the green mamba, the black mamba, puff adders, go on and on it goes. This coil snake, if you get bit by a coil snake in New Guinea around the coastal area, you'll not live to tell it. They can't get antidote quick enough to you. But that's around the coastal and highlands, pythons, boa constrictors, which becomes food for us too. Okay, well, if you don't have any further questions, then we'll call it a day for this. David?